We're psyched to start off our ninth annual conference with Lachlan Murdoch. Lachlan's been here for 4 years in a row, 2 years virtually, 2 years live. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Michael.
We really appreciate it. And for everyone tuning in, we turned the echo down a bit, so thanks for being there online as well. So Lachlan, there's been a ton of changes in the past year. Most of them, we'd argue, not that great. While the key drivers for Fox have stayed the same, as streaming strategies fade in and out, can you share with us how you see the media ecosystem evolving and how you position Fox for that worldview?
Great. Well, first of all, Michael and Robert, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here in New York with so many of your clients and partners and friends in person, and of course, everyone that's joining us virtually. So thank you. And appreciate everyone getting up early in the morning for this as well. So it has been an incredible couple of years. And the media landscape has probably accelerated its rate of change as we've gone through COVID, as people have been forced to think about how we work differently and about how consumers view our products in increasingly diverse way. But I think that for us has been a very positive, had a very positive impact because we only spun out the new Fox from the older, larger Fox when we sold our assets to Disney 3 years ago. And so we right-sized the company from the beginning. We were out of movie studios and expensive. It was a tough couple of years if you own movie studios and theme parks. So we were really well-positioned, I think, going into this. But nevertheless, we used it as an opportunity to continue to kind of refine our strategy and kind of perfect as much as possible our execution. And so where we are today is really a company that's really focused on live news, live sports, entertainment, but entertainment in a focused way. Obviously, the growth in entertainment for us is an acquisition we only made recently in Tubi, which is going from strength to strength. So all of our assets are really firing on all cylinders, which is a terrific position to be in sort of uncertain, choppy times.
Right. So because you've chosen not to invest in SVOD, after the Disney deal that you mentioned, can you review for us what your priorities are for the company, how you're going to grow EBITDA and cash flow, two important metrics that we like to focus on?
Absolutely. And I don't mean to have, I've always sort of turn from one of you guys,
I know, exactly.
So I don't mean to be rude.
I was thinking like we should sit in front of you almost.
Look, in the last quarter, obviously, I think we grew advertising revenues by 9%. We grew our subscription revenue by 5%. And so I think we've proven that we can continue to drive top-line revenue growth very aggressively with the asset set that we have. We just we haven't completed our upfront. The upfront kind of process goes for several weeks, but we had our upfront presentation in New York on Monday, which was very successful. And we're really able to highlight the theme of our upfront was Only Fox. What Only Fox is really focused on advertisers and our clients, in an ad-supported, in an entirely ad-supported way. And so whether that's how we serve our clients with whether it's in news or entertainment or in sport, it's going to be a massive sport year coming up for us, which is really, really exciting. Or digitally with Tubi, we're super serving advertising clients, so we think we'll continue to drive those top line advertising revenues. On the subscription side, we are focused on the MVPD the ecosystem. We think it's an economic model that's served consumers and media very well for a long time. So we're continuing to invest in that. We're continuing to keep the biggest sports events exclusive to our broadcast partners and affiliates and our cable distributors. So I think with balancing that strategy, we're going to be able to drive advertising revenue contingent on the ad market and subscription revenue pretty aggressively over the next couple of years.
Lachlan, when you think about the company, I think you can boil down the strategy and the opportunities and risks as the following. you've made a bet on the ecosystem. So the question is, what's the future of sports and news content within that ecosystem, right? So how do you see the prioritization of your content playing out in the next five years or so in terms of the ecosystem?
Well, as you know, this last quarter, we grew subscription numbers, as I mentioned, 5%. A lot of that growth came from retransmission, from the broadcast side. But having said that, you know, over the next, we did that despite the fact that we had very few renewals this year in the cycle. Whereas over the next 2 years, we have two-thirds of our distribution deals with cable companies. Two-thirds of our deals come up over the next 2 years. And I think that puts us in a really good position, particularly in a year when you have the Super Bowl and you have, the FIFA World Cup. To continue to drive subscription rate at the highest sort of industry level, but to do that, we have to make sure we're super serving those distributors and we're continuing to put in exclusive content. We're not diluting the product that we're giving affiliates or giving cable operators. In fact, we're investing in those products so we can drive those rates.
Okay. Robert?
I mean, you just mentioned it, so maybe just to expand upon it, like, how does your strategy differ in terms of keeping that premium content and all the sports exclusive and not sharing it with any over-the-top service?
Well, so it's a really important question, and actually goes back years, right? And so it's sort of when we make decisions, you know, I hope we're informed by history and lessons that we've learned and different things we've different things that have led us to this point. And so when we sold the entertainment assets, the majority of our entertainment assets to Disney, we really were making a decision. That we're not going to be in entertainment video on demand or SVOD subscription video on demand in a significant way. We said we're going to sell to Disney to give them scale so that they can beef up Disney Plus and have the scale to win with Disney Plus, but that we were stepping out of that market, right? And so we've been, by the way, very happily on the sidelines watching this sort of bloodbath, which is going on in the SVOD market. And what that's meant is, A, we haven't had to spend billions of dollars propping up an SVOD service, but we also haven't felt the need to artificially put sports into an SVOD service to keep subscription levels up, right? And I think that's been very important. So the reason why, you know, we're really able to keep sports and our highest, our best quality content exclusive to the MVPD ecosystem is really because we haven't had to sort of artificially keep a loss-making SVOD service inflated. And I think that's very important, right? So, again, it's not like a strategic decision that's just This week's strategy is actually something we've been led to over 3 years, and we've very carefully and very intentionally, being able to put ourselves in this, I think, enviable position.
Yeah, you mentioned how fast you grew last quarter without a lot of big renewals. Do you think that the next few years will start separating your strategy out in terms of financially from the others? Because that's where our assumption is, right? What your strategy is going to lead to higher affiliate fee growth than people who basically taken the best content and leaked it over the top, right? And the markets will show that in terms of the results.
Absolutely. And our argument is, as we continue to invest in the product for our distributors, frankly, we deserve a higher share of wallet right. from them. If other broadcasters are taking content non-exclusively, you know, outside of that bundle, they don't deserve the level of a subscription as we do, right? Yeah. So, and I think that's something we expect to see over the next couple of years.
So later today, after you, we have Perry Sook. We'll ask him the same question, and Chris Ripley, and I think they'll confirm your point of view of that.
By the way, Perry's terrific, and we really do see these guys as our partners in this business, and our job is to provide them with the best quality content. And not to see them as a as a competitor or just a client of some sort. Right. The distributors really are our partners in this ecosystem.
Okay. So I think we all can agree sports has been the glue to the pay TV bundle, and we continue to believe that. And now that Amazon is making sports a bigger priority, as you very well know, with Thursday Night Football, and Apple reportedly close to its Sunday Ticket deal, how should we think about Fox's ability to compete with new digital bidders on sports rights negotiations going forward from here?
We are. How should you think about how we're going to compete with new digital bidders? We're going to let Tom Brady negotiate all our contracts, and we're not worried about losing a thing. We've just gone through the NFL negotiation. Obviously, Amazon picked up Thursday Night Football. That was actually a positive for us.
We're very sad about that, actually.
Sure. So if I look at how that netted out, where we finished, we have a long-term extension, which sort of ensures the success of the future of Fox Sports for over the next decade. At the same time, we were able to exit a year early from a loss-making contract in Thursday Night Football. So I think there are more potential competitors in the marketplace, but I think it's in a way, and I think the NFL's been smart in how they've allocated their rights in a way that net and certainly for us has been a positive. So.
Do you think it all is a liability not to have, even if it's a loss-making streaming service, to go for sports rights? I look at what ESPN did with the NHL, where they bought all these rights and they dumped the rights that they don't need on ESPN Plus or something. So do you think at all there's a point when not having more surface is a problem in bidding for rights?
I think you can partner with people, right? I think, we because we're a smaller company and we're, I think we're pretty flexible and nimble. We can work with people if we need a platform to bid with us on rights, and also because we're not competing on SVOD with a digital player, I think that makes those partnerships easier in many ways. So actually, I think again, where we're positioned, I think net it's a positive not to have an SVOD service where we have to place those rights. Having said that, I think for the World Cup at the end of the year, we are going to put some like a catch-up service with all of the World Cup soccer games on Tubi. So it won't be the live games, but it'll be sort of catch-up as soon as the whistle's blown at full time for the super fans. So I think we can be pretty flexible in terms of how we sort of super serve our consumers, but at the same time, while retaining the most exclusive rights for our distribution partners.
So you just mentioned your big announcement that you made on the last quarter. So with the Tom Brady announcement, anything you do want to clarify, because there's been a lot reported in terms of the deal, and just more broadly, what this means for Fox and your commitment to the NFL?
The important thing with Tom is that, and this is what got me really engaged and excited about the opportunity when we started to talk to him about coming over, is that he's going to be, in addition to being, a senior analyst on the America's Game of the Week on Sundays, he's really going to be sort of our partner in sports and in Fox and the NFL, right? And so, he's going to be an ambassador to Fox. He's going to be working with advertisers and clients. He's going to be, engaged in the marketing. And so, I really see Tom as he'll be a tremendous analyst, but he's really, going to be a partner of ours in the business.
Okay, so the question we've been all worrying about is if cord cutting accelerates, you have the fixed costs of sports. Will you be able to properly generate the ROIs that you've thought? So when acceleration of cord cutting, there'd be pressure on ROI. So how do you offset that rate of cord cutting? Maybe you want to talk a bit about the length of your renewal cycle, because I think you guys have been very strategic about trying to pair that up. But the feedback from the market's always, gosh, if cord cutting accelerates, you know, what's Fox going to do, right? So how do you think about the ability to offset cord cutting and drive ROI on the sports contracts that you've signed?
So I think we can, so, you know, as you know, sort of this year on this quarter, it's the cable penetration dropping by about 5%, right? And you know, at that level, you know, and at the levels of, you know, sort of most sort of analysts, consensus analyst levels, we even higher than that, you know, we can absolutely keep pace with that in terms of our renewal cycles and our rate increases. So you know, when we model out and we look at, you know, and you do when you do a 10-year football deal, you do sort of project out, you know, what the cable universe is going to be, how much revenue we can achieve, and you know, through to, you know, not just to retain but to grow through our distribution agreements, and at those levels, you know, we can you know, very easily you know, continue to grow our subscription revenue.
Because so. your cycles are 3 or 4 year cycles, right? So your point is, over a 10-year contract, you'll have 2.5, 3 bites of the apple to reset prices.
No, that's right. Okay.
On the last quarter earnings call, you sounded pretty pleased with the early performance of USFL. So just wondering if you could talk bigger picture. How does a deal like this strategically help the general sports rights inflations, you know, given your interest in the league?
So USFL, you know, as a spring football league, it's people have tried this before, right? And hasn't always worked out well, and it's early days, right? So we're very pleased with it, with the early success. We've structured it differently than anyone structured spring league before. We brought a couple of partners in to help fund it. We own 100% and control 100% of the league. We control, you know, all of the franchises, the teams today, and we've created a hub in Birmingham to play all the games. So we kept costs and the complexity of running a league like this, you know, incredibly low, and that's important because what you're in this for, you know, a few years to really get traction and start to grow. It was important that we partnered with NBC to broadcast the games because that gives us absolutely the most reach, you know, possible for these games for people to start to watch and engage in the sport. This first year, because both for us and for NBC, you have a lot of other programming commitments. So you know, the kickoff times of the games are you know, bit of a mess, right? They're all over the place to be able to fit into the schedule, so we can show them live. You know, that's something that gets cleaned up next year. And then ultimately you move out of Birmingham and you start to play, you know, more games in the cities where the franchises are based. So we see this as a few years in terms of you know, launching the league. We're incredibly pleased with how it started, and obviously strategically, and by the way, we've structured it financially that it's not a burden to us, and strategically, obviously, you know, if you can get the ratings that that are equivalent to an NHL, you know, rating or baseball or basketball ratings, I think that's a net positive, right? So and we'll actually, you know, add to the sports you know, choices. So.
Well, can I just go back a bit to the cord cutting question? You know, I've asked you this in the past. Have you been surprised, even at this point, that we've not seen better virtual bundles of sports and news, right? Like, you would think that there's a market need for just smaller bundles focused on sports and news. And do you see any signs of that changing, where basically there's, you know, either YouTube or Hulu, someone is trying to figure out a new virtual bundle? Because it seems like the bundles we're getting are bigger and bigger, more expensive, right? So it's kind of defeated the purpose.
Yeah. So I remember, you know, a few years ago or longer, you know, probably 5 or 6 years ago, when we were all talking about the core bundles, right? Yeah. We call them skinny bundles. I like to call them, you know, core bundles, because you know you can get with fewer channels, you can still get, you know, 90% of what consumers want to view. And you know, I think, you know, if anything, we're disappointed that the digital MVPDs have moved away from those core bundles, and you know, as they've added channels, they've added cost and had to increase pricing. And so we've seen over the last, you know, couple of years, obviously, the digital players take price increases, right? And you know, obviously that has an impact on growth for them. So selfishly, because we have the channels that are essential in a core bundle, that's, you know, important part of our positioning. You know, it's impossible to envisage a bundle that doesn't have the number one news channel in the country and the quality and breadth of our sports content. And so we'd like to see the market come back to a core bundle if possible. We really haven't seen that, as you've said. And it doesn't have to be only news or only sport. You know, there are obviously other channels that would fit into a core bundle that I think would make a pretty compelling consumer proposition. So.
Yeah, in many ways, the decision you made to sell the rest of Fox was in some part maybe a bet on, hey, the world's going to have to change. You know, you don't need all these excess channels. Just focus on the core. We're still waiting for that to happen.
Yeah. And for us, and it goes back obviously to some of the early questions around subscribers and how we're going to drive growth, because we are so focused on only, you know, a core set of assets and sports, news, the station group, you know, entertainment and you know, new business in Hulu, because we're so focused on that, we don't have legacy cable channels that we're trying to defend, right? Yeah. And so, you know, I think, you know, other companies, you know, when they make these strategic decisions, rightly trying to defend some of their legacy businesses, we don't have that conundrum, and I think that puts us in a great position. It's one of the reasons why, you know, again, a few years ago, when Disney bought the RSNs from us and had to unsell them, a lot of people and a lot of smart bankers and even investors, we should buy the RSNs back, and we can get them back at, you know, 50 cents on the dollar from what we sold them for. And but what we realized, you know, being kind of intimately with intimate sort of knowledge of the business, is that those RSNs would require the rest of the company defending them, right, and sort of supporting their distribution and their reach. And that's not the position we want to be in. We can use all of our leverage to drive our subscription fees and advertising, but really fees in across the stations and across our cable networks. So.
All right, so let's switch over to the biggest driver of your affiliate fees, Fox News. So how do you think Fox News is currently positioned relative to traditional competition and, you know, some of the newer networks that caused some of the worries that the last election?
The biggest driver of our affiliate fees is actually our station retransmission group and how we're able to drive retransmission pricing. That's what's, you know, driven our growth this year, even in a year when we've had so few kind of renewals. So, but having said that, you know, for the cable bundle, Fox News is essential and is now achieving broadcast ratings. And so when we look at how we continue to improve and continue to innovate and refine Fox News, we're not looking at CNN or MSNBC. You know, I think I get these numbers wrong, but we got these ratings every morning. But, you know, the other morning we beat one of the other MSNBC or CNN by 113%, and then the other one we beat by 160%. So you know, we're we're so far ahead of them in the market that our competitive set is the broadcast networks. And so when you look at just the innovations that we've done this year, you know, with Jesse Waters at 7 p.m. has over 3 million, averaging over 3 million viewers. You know, Gutfeld at night, you know, being sort of the new king of late night on a cable channel with, you know, 30% less households than his competitors. You know, The Five, again, achieving being the number one show in cable news at 5 o'clock when hot levels are down. And so it's a tremendous success of all of the hard work and sort of looking across the different day parts and different hours and you know, just making, you know, good decisions and careful decisions in terms of growing that business. So as the business is, again, is more comparable to a broadcast network than a cable news network, We think we deserve broadcast rights fees in terms of subscription and distribution, and also frankly broadcast level advertising CPMs.
Right, so my next question would be your confidence in driving growth, but in that answer, implicit in that answer is your belief that you should get retrans-like fees. So a big part of the growth going forward has to be the renewal cycle on Fox News reaching much higher levels of monetization for affiliates. But, that's the core. And I've heard Steve Tomczyk say too, we should be treated like a broadcast network, right? So mm-hmm. when you go out to your distributors, that's going to be the ask.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. And then let me ask you, Fox News, it's when you line up the advertising monetization, it looks under-monetized versus other networks. Do you think there is existing advertising, hesitancy due to some of the content in primetime not to advertise on Fox News? Have you dug into potentially the under-monetization and what closes that?
No, I think as a cable network, you historically you don't monetize in the same way the broadcast networks have been able to monetize their advertising spots. And I think that, if you look at, I think since the new Fox was created, I think it's right to say our advertising revenues on Fox News are up about 30%. And so we've gone from strength to strength each year. But when you look at Fox News, you have to look at, we rebranded the business, the division as Fox News Media a couple of years ago, and a nice name or a grander sounding name. Actually, what we've done is we've launched, the Fox News Digital is a growing business, is incredibly strong. Our audio business, both in cars with Sirius XM and with podcasting, is growing huge. We've launched a book business. And so, all those other elements of it, we've just launched, by the way, I shouldn't forget, Fox Weather, which, incredibly powerful brand. It's now distributed in every broadband home in America can get it. It will be part of our renewal cycle with traditional cable distributors. That would be a tremendous advertising platform for our partners, a really tremendous platform. So as we see growing Fox News, we're not only in the news business. We broaden that into many other businesses and many other revenue streams and revenue opportunities. And when you talk to our fans in Middle America, people who are heavy Fox News viewers, they don't see us as just a news business either. They see us as an American media brand that speaks to them in a unique way.
So can you share any update on Fox Nation as part of that strategy in terms of either subscribers or just engagement? And how important is Fox Nation for the future of the Fox News media segment?
So Fox Nation is going incredibly well. I think there's a point in time when it's always hard to put your finger exactly on that point in time, but when you have an amount of content, both fresh content that's ingested in the system every week, but also a library of content that you've built up over a few years, there's a point in time where you sort of tip over to a point where the business just starts to hum very well. And what we're seeing in Fox Nation is, I think industry-leading low churn rates, around 7%, and industry-leading trial to conversion rates. So people who are on a two-week trial, free trial, the number of them that are moving over to a paid subscriber is top of every metric, and so we're incredibly pleased with how that works. But to put that in context, Fox Nation is a service which is designed to super serve our most loyal fans. But what that gives us, though, it gives us an engagement, a further engagement with the people who are most loyal to Fox News, and it gives us a platform where we can go into new verticals. We can experiment with lifestyle and outdoors and a ton of other sort of content that we can, which is some of the most successful content on Fox Nation today. So it again is part of our strategy to diversify away from sort of a simple core news vertical.
If I can switch over to broadcast from Fox Network for a second, I know this may be a question for Charlie Collier and you, but in the new Fox, you know, there's been a debate in the investment community about what role does scripted entertainment play on Fox. So what's your current view of kind of the ideal programming mix on in broadcast? And I know you had a $30 million write-down last quarter, but you know, even that, but how does that factor into your view of the optimal mix of scripted content versus reality program versus sports on the network, just given the economic pressures in the business?
So I think, first of all, let me deal with the $30 million write-down first, because you know the reality is that doesn't factor into our kind of long-term thinking about scripted entertainment. Right. And that's really because that $30 million write-down is specifically due to, you know, COVID delays in production and having to shift the schedule and broadcast shows later in the year with different lead-ins and things. So that was a prudent write-down, but really related specifically to sort of COVID delays in production schedules. I should say though, that as an industry, you know, we are still operating in on the entertainment side, certainly in Los Angeles, but we're kind of really across all our productions, with protocols, COVID protocols, that were designed at the height of the pandemic, you know, before vaccinations, right, with potentially stronger strains of COVID-19. And so they were absolutely the right protocols to put in place. But we're still operating under them now, and it does cause tremendous disruptions in production schedules when someone gets sick. So hopefully that changes and those protocols start to reflect the COVID the evolved, you know, COVID world that we're in today. But those rights don't have an effect on our long term thinking about our entertainment schedule. Having said that, you know, you're certainly going to see a mix of entertainment with unscripted programming, reality programming. Rob Wade's doing a tremendous job there, as Michael Thorne is doing in entertainment. I think through all of the different programming decisions that Charlie's made over the last few years, the Entertainment Network has remained profitable through all of that, which I'm not sure everyone can say. And so we've been very careful on our cost base and the shows that we're airing. And it does become a mix of shows, more expensive scripted entertainment and less expensive unscripted. It's also one of the reasons why, you know, we acquired TMZ this year. They have a tremendous product and brand. You know, that they operate, you know, very efficiently. Also, one of the reasons why we bought Mar Vista, who are, you know, experts in lower cost, you know, efficient programming, and then obviously Bento Box on the animation side, you know, helps us develop animation in a cost effective way.
Okay. So, given that it's upfront week, you know, we'll ask our obligated advertising question here. But how is Fox approaching ad sales in this probably more challenging environment, or not for you because of the sports and news focus? And then maybe also just touch on how Tubi plays into your broader advertising strategy.
Yep. So we look, obviously there's the national advertising and local advertising. Advertising is very healthy, and so this last quarter we had 9% our gain. We've been able to drive really rate and CPM pretty effectively. I think the areas, if there's any areas of concerns, you know, automotive is still down. I think across for everyone, right, across the board, with supply chain issues and other issues that they're faced, but that's been made up for in other categories. So that's a background to the upfront. The upfront, and again, we had our presentation on Monday, but you know, these negotiations have been going on already for weeks. Is you know, very, very strong, but it's hard to say whether that's just us or the market, because you know, for us, we have a schedule where, you know, this year we have a Super Bowl, this year we have the FIFA World Cup. We also on Thanksgiving weekend we have. I think, a Texas game on Thursday night, the Dallas Cowboys game on Thursday night. We have U.S. versus England on Friday night, the FIFA World Cup. We have Ohio versus Michigan on Saturday, college football, and on Sunday we have the America's Game of the Week. And in total, we project we'll reach over 85 million Americans that weekend in the biggest shopping weekend of the year. So it's a second Super Bowl, right? So effectively, we have two Super Bowls, or 1.85 Super Bowls this year. So it's a tremendous position to be in, and frankly, our clients and our partners understand that and understand the unique power of the assets that we have this year. And then I should also say this. The other thing, sorry, Michael, to interrupt, but the other thing that's I wouldn't say exciting, but just happens every couple of years is obviously the midterm elections coming up. The last midterm election had a record $180 million in advertising revenue for midterm, right? The regular election cycle is much higher than that. But we expect, from what we've already seen with primary spending in the primaries, we expect this midterm election to blow through that $180 million record in revenue pretty substantially.
And what I was going to say is, while you avoided SVOD, you focused on AVOD and you bought Tubi, right? So you want to talk a bit about your strategy for Tubi and how Tubi is or is not integrated into how Fox goes to market in advertising?
Yep. Robert, that was the last part of your question too. I didn't answer. So Tubi is integrated and is a part of all of our advertising conversations, but it's not a forced sale. And so, what I mean by that is that we know, because it's an important add-on that gives our clients more reach. It gives them younger audiences, diverse audiences. It's a tremendous sort of incremental buy for our clients. But it's not forced together, and because of that, we know that the revenue in Tubi, which we project to be over $1 billion in the next couple of years, is truly incremental to Fox's revenue. We're not taking revenue out of one pocket and putting it in another pocket. This is truly new revenue for us, and revenue we would not have been able to enjoy had we not acquired and now run Tubi. So I think that's really important. We're not it's not a shell game, and we want to allocate revenue. And so it's truly incremental. It's incredibly sophisticated in terms of the AI and the ad stack that Farhad and his team at Tubi have created, really over like a decade, right? So they're way ahead in terms of sophistication in how they can manage their ad load, how they target their advertising, how they actually can increase or decrease the ad load depending on the actual viewer, right? And so and that viewer's propensity or openness to see advertising. So it's an incredibly sophisticated system. We think we're way ahead of our competitors and the pack in terms of the service with 42,000 titles and the technology. So going back to the advertising question, when we present it to our clients, they are very attracted to it, and it's growing very strongly. I think in the last quarter, 50% up in revenue.
So. And we never a question I have, like steady state, what kind of business model, like what kind of margin business do you think AVOD is? We debate SVOD all the time, but we never really focus on what's AVOD steady state. Do you think margins would be, if SVOD's 20%, do you think is it a better business than SVOD?
It's definitely a better business than SVOD. So that's the easy part of the answer. Yeah. What the margins will be, it's interesting. We had profitable quarters breaking quarters in Tubi. We've chosen to invest in it because we think it's a really important business and really is part of the future of how people are going to watch television and television entertainment. And so it's the right thing to be investing in. Having said that, you can tip it into profitability tomorrow if you wanted to. But I think overall steady state, I think you're talking in that 20 to maybe 30% margin range.
Okay, so. Cool.
Just following up on the Tubi piece, there's clearly some new entrants coming into the broader streaming market with Disney Plus and Netflix. So how do you see that impacting Tubi's position to continue to take share of that streaming advertising pie?
So again, part of our upfront pitch was this line, only Fox, right? And again, when you have a sales line, but when you come up with a slogan, right, for lack of a better term, without more coffee, when you come up with a slogan, it the important thing for a slogan, like, it's got to be true, and it's got to actually speak to different constituents, you know, and stakeholders within the business. And so what we talked about only Fox was that, you know, only Fox is like entirely focused on our advertisers and our clients. And what that means in terms of strategically for us as well is that we are not kind of confusing the consumer message, right, and the consumer proposition with different tiers. With, hey, here's a subscription tier that there's no advertising, and you can pay a few dollars less and get advertising, and not quite clear what that ad load is. And by the way, if you're in one tier, we'll try to push you into the other tier, or some content will be in one tier and some will be in another. It's a very confusing and I think frustrating proposition to the ultimate viewer, the ultimate consumer, but also to advertisers and clients. We are the only company that's 100% focused on kind of serving our viewers, but serving our advertising clients. And then we're partners in their business. We want them to succeed, and we want to offer them the best advertising platform for them. And so I think that's an important differentiator with Tubi. Because of that as well, and because Tubi is not the primary viewing, like 98% of the viewing is on demand viewing. The ad load is very low, right, and purposely so. So it's because it's a great consumer experience. Mm-hmm. Again, that's a positive for advertisers and a positive for the viewers as well. So we think Tubi's in a tremendous position. We talked a little bit before about the technology that they've created, and they're a tech company first and proudly so. I think as other players enter the market, they'll have a hybrid models, which are not great. But I think it'll increase the overall kind of marketplace for digital advertising, and if you can be and streaming advertising, and if you can be at the top of that that business, I think it'll actually ultimately help Tubi. So.
Drilling down a bit more on that, what I wonder is, as you see people like Roku and Amazon, who own operating systems and platforms, realize they need to get even stronger in the AVOD market. Do you see that potentially as a risk for Tubi's growth, where you no longer have distribution partners who are friends, but potential frenemies they need to grow the advertising parts of their business?
From a distributor's point of view, we've been able to work pretty closely with them all. They get a share of revenue on different platforms, so actually they've been tremendous partners and you've like been part of Tubi's growth. So I don't see that. And I also, going back to Robert's question, I think it was interesting when we had a piece of Hulu and we were watching Hulu's growth, and when Hulu launched the ad-free tier, we were worried that everyone would take the ad-free tier because actually you were making enough money with the advertising, and. While we were there, I'm not sure what it's done since. Only about a third of people took the ad-free tier, right? Two-thirds of people were happy to keep the advertising. And what that certainly taught me and taught us kind of corporately is that free is a pretty good proposition for people, right? And so it's a great proposition for maybe people in Manhattan or Los Angeles or San Francisco don't understand that, but particularly going into a potentially recessionary period, or certainly high inflation period, free is a tremendous proposition. And so some of these hybrid models, if you're $19 with no ads and you're $12, but you have some ads, well, why don't you just have some ads and be zero and be free? Our proposition is the simplest, and I think it's really the most attractive to most Americans. So
it's taken us this long to get to sports gambling. So given the importance of sports in your traditional media portfolio, can you update us on how Fox is positioned in online sports betting? And I mean, clearly you guys were very early to this with the Stars Group deal all the way back in 2019. So why has this been a focus of yours for so long?
All the way back in 2019. Yeah. That seemed like
yeah, before the pandemic, like before the inflation.
Yeah, pre-pandemic. We were early to it. Part of our overall strategy is we have the largest reach and the best engagement in news and sport and also to a large degree in entertainment. But how do we take that reach and that engagement, and how do we monetize it in new ways, but in ways that are potentially very, very significant, right? Very, very substantial. And so, clearly, in sports, and with the legalization of sports wagering, state by state, clearly that was something we saw very early as a huge opportunity for us. And so, so we did the deal with the Stars Group. I think we structured our part of that, very well. We obviously we're not licensed, so we structured as sort of options into the business. But what we were charged with delivering was, a huge audience that's engaged with wagering. We do that in a fun way, right? We do that with a free to play game, which is Fox Bet Super 6, and that is over 6.6 million, I think, users who download the app and use it. Particularly, it goes through obviously a different cycle depending on the sports cycle, but it's obviously tremendously popular, particularly with the in the football season, and so that's worked incredibly well. We're frustrated with the fact that the R piece of that, we have a big option in FanDuel, 18.6%, but then the Fox Bet joint venture is only rolled out in four markets. So we're frustrated that hasn't been rolled out in more markets. It's not something that we operate as not being a licensed player, and that's sort of the basis of a big part of the arbitration we're going through now with Flutter, and we expect to be through that arbitration in the summer.
So we have two closing questions. Let me ask you the first, which is there a growing frustration internally about not receiving credit for your growth, your assets, which can lead to a reevaluation of the company as a public standalone entity?
No. I was going to use an Australian phrase, but you probably wouldn't understand.
Oh, we'll translate it.
we have big raps on ourselves, which means we like our story. We can see the growth within the company, and we're excited for the next few years. And the management team as a whole is engaged, is energized, and really focused on driving both revenue growth and EBITDA growth. I think particularly this next year with the sports that we've outlined, the political cycle that we've outlined. Our renewals in our our with our distributors, right. Two thirds coming up in the next 2 years. So we're incredibly excited by the prospects for that company over the next few years. And so I think that's what we're focused on. And it's really up to what's up to us to tell the story. To right. Come, thank you for having me here this morning to be able to tell that story, because that's a really important part of getting people to understand the potential of Fox.
Okay. Robert's the last one.
So the last one to follow up on that. Is there maybe one big surprise or something that you think investors aren't giving you credit for today that we should be focused on?
I thought we did that on the earnings call. So at the end. So look, I think it shouldn't be a surprise. We've talked about really the breadth of the company today. I think you'll continue to see to be win in the AVOD market. I think we can monetize some of our businesses better. I think, you know, if you look at Fox News Media, it's the new businesses, again, outside of the kind of linear channel, in digital, in audio, lesser extent, but smaller, in books and things, like we can monetize the Fox News Media brands, you know, better. That's pretty clear to me. And so there are all these things that we do on a day-to-day basis as we manage the business that I'm, again, that I said we're tremendously focused on and excited about. So there shouldn't be surprises because we're pretty transparent about them. But we just have to keep telling the story. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.